This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, the business station. My name is Rich Bradbury. This, of course, is Cruise Control, the car show in three parts. I'm joined, as per usual, by my friends, my fellas, my other superheroes, Arif Ruse, the man with the news, and Daniel Fernandez, from DSF.my. Say hello, fellas.
Hello.
I have to say hello in this voice because Richard has just called me a superhero.
Because all superheroes sound like that, including Wonder Woman. Right, what have we got this week then, Arif? Kick it off.
We've got quite a lot of news, but first we're going to start with the Raya Rush because it is back.
Yes.
Daniel was a bit late to this recording because he was stuck in the Raya Rush.
Oh.
Yes, because I was, I'm in Penang, of all places. I'm in Penang, I'm test driving a new car, trying to get to the hotel as fast as possible to do this show so that, you know, you guys can, you know, enjoy the superhero content that I give out every week.
We got to appreciate his dedication to the job.
His commitment, yes.
Yes, so even though I'm hungry, thirsty, tired and sweaty, the show comes first.
The show must go on. Okay.
Anyway, speaking about the Raya Rush, obviously everybody's stuck in the jam, and you know, a couple of days ago as well, everybody was stuck in the jam because there were a lot of floods, and it is the fourth time or more this year that I can recall at least that it has caused KL to grind to a halt. And as usual, DBKL, the authorities say that they'll once again membuat kajian, which, you know, is the same thing that they said 1 month ago, 4 months ago, roughly a year ago. But it's cool. At least the floods won't be able to reach us when we're stuck in the traffic jams on those new elevated highways, right? But as we've mentioned in the past, amid all these talks and no actions on mitigating flood, now might be the time to actually tick that special perils box. And we'll never know where and when it's going to hit in the first place anyway, right?
Right. Speaking of special perils, if you've not ticked that box and your car has suffered due to the flooding, Daniel's got a bit of a story that sheds some light on what it takes to quote-unquote rescue your car after it's been consumed by those horrible murky floodwaters, written off by insurers, and had service center quote a repair bill that's worth more than the car itself. Somewhat eye-watering. 45,000 ringgit was the quote to restore this guy's Subaru XV. But is it worth the time, the effort, and the pain? Daniel.
Okay, to start with, I want everyone to understand this. Special perils means a section in your car insurance which you have to pay a little bit more extra money to get coverage in a situation of flood. Or when they say special perils, there's a lot of other things involved in that, like, you know, maybe getting hit by lightning or a tree falling or whatever else. But a lot of people forget this area because they think, I don't want to pay a little bit extra. So please think about it. It doesn't mean that you have to live in a flood-prone area. You can be in front of Menara Maybank in the center of town, and when the flood comes, your car will be flooded. Anyway, so this guy, months ago, he had a Subaru XV. He got caught in a very bad flash flood. The car was completely submerged in flood water. Completely. Now, he shared with us his situation on Facebook. I looked at it and it was quite sad because there were so many other people like this. He's just one of many. Now, he was very detailed in his plight. He said, I just want someone to help me. Tell me what I can do. I don't have insurance coverage for a flood. I just need some help. Now, of course, a lot of people said, go back to the dealership. Now, in any car, whether it's a Perdua or a Rolls-Royce or a Mercedes or a BMW, if you go back to the dealership, it'll not be cheap simply because they're not here to fix your car. They will change everything. Because why? When they give you this new components, they have to give you a warranty because they're the dealership.
Yeah.
So nothing new is going to be cheap. If you calculate back, if a car has been flooded, you have to basically change almost half of everything you have.
Oof.
And if your car costs 100,000 ringgit, you're going to be paying half. If your car costs 1 million ringgit, you're going to be paying half. So when he was quoted 45,000 ringgit, he was, of course, very upset because at that point, his car was worth probably in the used car market before flood, about 50,000 ringgit. So, of course, he went into the Facebook community and people started helping him, and the community came together. And the community is fantastic. But they are all looking at second-hand parts, reconditioned parts, little guys who can fix. So this guy went through the whole process.
Mm-hmm.
We talked to him, and he explained everything to us. It took him about 2 to 3 months. He went from point to point. Now, it's very tedious. You have to take a lot of time off from work. You have to go and visit so many different people, like, you know, to wash your car one place, to clean your cushion another place, to replace some of your plastic components another place. So we detailed in our article, I mean, you can see the detailing, from where he went to clean the shop, from where he went and got little things done for 2,000 ringgit, 1,000 ringgit, 500 ringgit, 800 ringgit, how individuals from the club explained to him what to do, where to go, who to see, how to get things done. And he managed to get almost 90% of his car done for a third of the price.
Oh, well done.
Well done. Now, the car started. He's running it. He shared some pictures of before and after. Okay, it's great. But I want to say this, and I want to help everyone understand that. And also explain to this Subaru XV owner, your car is starting, your car is working right now. But there are a lot of metal components in the car that are going to start rusting in the next few months.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a lot of little components that will start short-circuiting. Now, these are not major components. You'll still be able to start a car. But it'll be things like your infotainment system, your aircon compressor components, your power window connectors, you know, little things. Some of the things sitting under your carpets, you know, wiring loom.
Yeah.
Because you have not changed everything new. The connectors, a lot of them were cleaned and put back, but the rust has already gone in, you know, process.
Mm.
So this is the worry. And this is where a lot of people, I'm going to suggest to a lot of people, I also suggested to this guy, it's time to sell the car. But are you going to sell it as a flooded car, or are you going to sell it as, hey, I'm just selling my car because I'm upgrading, you know?
Mm.
That's the big problem, isn't it? Because, like, on the one hand, he spent a lot of money trying to fix up the car to make sure it's running and everything. But when he's going to sell it, he's probably going to lose a lot more money in terms of the value, right?
There's also that kind of moral kind of quandary, isn't there? You know, do you tell somebody that the car was flooded before, or do you just want to get back the money that you've got? And, oh, that's a difficult, sticky situation to be in.
Exactly, Richard. The moral quandary. I mean,
yeah.
Okay, say, Richard, it happened to you. What would you do?
I'd have to tell the person that it had been flooded. I wouldn't be able to live with myself. You know, as much as I'd want to get rid of the thing and try and recoup as much as I could. If I bought a car and that person that sold it to me knew that it had been flooded, I would be furious if they hadn't passed on that detail to me. Because at least if you know, then you can have some expectation of there being some advanced repair costs, you know? So you can add it to your weighing scales of pros and cons, I guess.
Okay, so Ari, if that happened to you, what would you do?
Yeah, I mean, obviously I would tell the person I'm selling the car to that, you know, it's been flooded. But then again, if the car has been flooded that bad, and you can obviously see the pictures on Daniel's website, it would be a lost cause for me, I think. I'll probably break it down, sell it as parts as best I could.
Okay,
so sad.
Now I'm going to answer the question.
Yeah.
I won't tell them it's a flooded car.
Why?
And then I will go to the IC department and change my name to Richard Bradbury.
To what?
And then I'll move to a small town.
Ah, see, this is why you write about cars and don't sell them.
No, I mean, I'm putting myself in this guy's shoes. I mean, if you sell your car and you tell them it's flooded, you'll probably get half the price, you know?
Yeah.
That's not even going to recover what you've paid. So you're back to square one. If you keep the car, you're going to get some problems down the road, not serious problems, but you're going to get some problems down the road. So you're going to end up, it's going to be like what we all call a money pit.
Yeah, yeah, poor fella.
Yeah.
Exactly. Not one person, there's so many people out there. And the funny thing is, today evening at 5:30, someone called me who had their car flooded 2 days ago in the big storm in KL.
Mm-hmm.
And they were asking me, can I use the same kind of process that this guy used in this article? So I told him, I said, but his car is a different car. His car is a Nissan Sylphia. I said, you know, are you going to repair it to keep it? He said, listen, I'm a retired man. I don't have enough money to buy a new car. I said, well, then you go through the same process.
Mm.
You go to the Facebook page for Nissan owners. You try and see what you can do. Go to some, you know, junkyard parts and see what you can do. But he has to keep the car for life, like, basically.
Mm.
Yeah.
Wow.
So that's the story, gentlemen.
That's the story. Okay, shall we move on then?
Yep.
So moving on, there is something else that you want to bring up, Daniel, because there's been quite a bit of talk about this one viral video that I'm sure everybody saw on Twitter, about one viral video where a man threw himself in front of a moving car, smashing the driver's windscreen, and I guess hoping to fraudulently claim some sort of insurance or medical from this quote-unquote accident.
Correct. Now, of course, the driver of this car had a dash cam, so caught the whole process and threatened him. And of course, PDRM came in and they've arrested him. And, you know, the whole story is there on DSF. At first, I didn't share the story. I waited to see what happened. Only when he got arrested did I share the story, because I didn't know whether this was a manufactured video or was it real.
Mm-hmm.
Now, knowing that it's real now, I'm saying this. If you didn't have a dash cam, what would have happened to you?
You'd have a hard time convincing people that you didn't hit him, wouldn't you?
Correct. So I think this guy works for one of the biggest dash cam manufacturers in town. Because he has just made dash cams a necessity for everyone. Because you would not believe it, guys, the number of people who have emailed me, contact me, which is the best dash cam to buy and how much should I pay and where should I go? Now, not only that, if you go to Facebook, a lot of people are starting to ask, I live in PJ, where's the best dash cam installation? Suddenly, everybody wants a dash cam.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think this guy worked for one of the biggest dash cam companies, and they've done the best marketing gimmick ever. Yes, the guy's been arrested, but if he pays a fine, and then that's about it.
So after this show, Daniel, you can tell me where the best dash cam is to get installed and where I should get it done.
No, you see, you don't need one because nobody's going to do this again.
Yeah, because everybody's done it now.
Exactly.
It's a real big problem in China as well. They had a huge issue with it, and it's ever so slightly different there, because once that quote-unquote crime has been committed, very few people get involved and will pick the person up. Because if more damage is done to that person whilst they're on the road, you can then get sued for it.
Oh, really? I didn't know this. Oh, yeah, because yes. You're not supposed to move someone who's been injured.
Correct. Yes, correct.
Oh, so this has been going on for some time.
A very long time, yes.
Do they have this in England by any chance?
Yeah, they do. I mean, it's rare, but it happens. It's generally people from, you know, who are drug addicts or, you know, drunks or whatever, and just want to make a quick buck.
Okay.
That's generally what the people...
Okay, so if I'm on holiday in UK and I've run out of money, this is what I can do.
You can either do that or you can do the busking like they do here as well.
Okay, good. You know, good to know, Richard, good to know.
Just as long as you've got dreadlocks, people will be okay with you and, you know, you'll be able to...
I do have dreadlocks.
Well, so I guess the conclusion is time to get ourselves a dash cam.
Yes. You don't need an expensive dash cam. You just need a dash cam. You can buy it on many of the shopping networks. I've got dash cam in 3 of my cars, which are regularly being used. And I think it's very useful for also capturing possible accident scenarios and all the people who are beating traffic lights.
Oh, that's a good idea.
And we can start up a YouTube channel called Malaysian Drivers and upload videos and become famous and, rich that
yes,
way.
Exactly.
Viral for a few other different reasons. Ah,
yes,
good idea.
Yes. Okay. So you heard it here first. This is how we're going to make money.
Right.
Anyway, we have one final story. It's quite grim news, despite all the little bits of giggling and joking. Months ago, perhaps, we reported the fact that, you know, oil prices are rising all over the world. And Daniel, you specifically highlighted the rising prices of tires in 2022. And you said it was, you know, rising by as much as 30%. But now something else is increasing in price.
Yes. So what happened is, why I highlighted about tire prices, because I went to change my tires because, you know, I want to stay on the ground. I want to stay on the road. I don't want to lose control. And my tire guy told me, you know, his prices of tires have gone up a little bit and it's going up more as the months progress, up by 30%. And that shocked me because 30% on a $300 tire is 100 ringgit, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I said, okay, fine. I better start changing all my tires, but you don't do something as rash as that. Now, last week, I went to service my car, so I went to change my engine oil. And my regular guy told me, he said, listen, I've got some old stock oil. Don't worry, it's not expired because oil doesn't expire. I can give you the old price. I said, what do you mean by old price? What do you mean? It didn't capture my attention. And he said, no, the new stock of engine oil, the price has gone up by 15%. Some have gone up 5, some have gone up 15. I said, why? It just dawned on me. It's the same thing as tires. It's not anything else but cost of production, currency, and shipping costs has really gone up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So he told me, he said, not only has your engine oil price gone up, your oil filter and air filter price has also gone up.
Oof.
So the only thing that didn't go up in this whole process was the labor cost to service my car.
Uh-huh.
So that is happening this year. But after having my car serviced, I call a couple of people I know who work in the lubricant industry, and they confirm that, you know, the prices have to go up. It's not like they are making extra money. It's the cost of bringing the products in, whether it's bottled locally or manufactured locally. Whatever it is, there are ingredients that are coming from overseas, and the movement of goods and services around the world has gone up, and they have to bring the price up. And let's not forget our currency exchange.
Mm, as wonderful as it is right now.
Yes, sir. So, Richard, I'm glad that you're an expert earning in British pounds. You're not to have...
Oh, I wish. Oh, my, do I wish.
Okay, so that's really, you know, something that people have to consider, because I know servicing your car is important, but now what my worry is now is a lot of people are going to put off servicing or start using cheaper oil just because they want to save a few bucks. But in the long run, they might lose a lot in terms of car maintenance and reliability.
All right. On that note then, that happy note, joyful note, thank you once again, Daniel, for all the happy and joyful stories.
You're most welcome.
Let's take a short break. Folks, you're tuned into Cruise Control, the car show here on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Beyond Frivolous Matters, BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome back, folks, to Cruise Control, the car show here on BFM 89.9. My name is Rich Bradbury. I'm joined, as usual, by Arif Ruz and Daniel Fernandez from DSF.my. If you're only just joining us, we've been speaking about how to rescue a car, if possible, insurance fraud, and those motor oil prices that are going up. Now we have some car launches. We've got a Subaru and a BMW. Tell us more.
Before that, Volvo actually sent us a press release this week, which basically stated that, you know, they delivered 65 units of the XC40 electric car this weekend. And initially, I looked at this and I thought, you know, it's just another press release. But it is actually, you know, the first batch of first ever locally assembled electric cars in Malaysia that have been delivered to customers. And, you know, 65 units for now. Daniel says another 35 expected next week. And I think in the whole grand scheme of things, this spells quite a lot of positivity for the EV ownership in Malaysia, because apparently, as of 1st January 2022, there were only 274 electric vehicles in Malaysia. But due to the attractive pricing and I guess the attractive package of the XC40 Recharge, this might be one of the more popular EVs in Malaysia, right, Daniel?
Exactly. And, you know, because Volvo is not selling any more petrol-powered vehicles, they're only going for EVs. I mean, it's a good move. Very happy for them. You know, went without a hitch. The whole country, all the dealers were delivering cars. The only problem is, if tomorrow I wanted to buy a Volvo XC40 petrol, I can't. If I'm a person, for example, who doesn't want to embrace the electric vehicle drama and I wanted a petrol vehicle, I will not go back to Volvo, because I'll say, hey, you don't have one for me. So what am I going to do? I have to go to your competitor who's still selling a petrol car. Now, this is where a week ago, the management at BMW in Germany said, hey, electric is coming, but we're still going to develop petrol-powered vehicles for ASEAN countries and countries like in South America where EV adoption will take some time.
Mm-hmm.
Smart
so
move.
What I worry is a brand like Volvo is climbing very far, could actually see some issue in about a year or so when people start coming back and asking for non-electric vehicles.
Yeah, that is a proper problem. But at the end of the day, though, Volvo doesn't sell too many cars actually in Malaysia, right?
Well, they've been on a quite healthy uptake for the last 5 years. And that momentum doesn't seem to be, you know, worrying them. COVID has not worried them in that momentum, because why? They've not been a huge car manufacturer, but they've been doing enough to get people interested in them. And the XC40 has been quite a successful model. And now with going just pure electric, I could see them feeling a little bit of a pinch in the months to come. Because why? Number two, we must also understand that not every electric car is coming out as fast as possible from the factories because of the chip issue. Because electric cars use more chips than a standard petrol car.
Yep, yep.
I'm hoping things will change, but I don't think the whole of Malaysia is going to embrace electric cars as fast as we think it would.
Very true. And I agree with that as well. Mm. Speaking of embracing some types of car, we have we have a car that probably has never sold that well, and slash, you know, it's an enthusiast car. And the car we're talking about is the Subaru BRZ, which is essentially the twin of the Toyota GR86, or the GT86, as it was once previously known. Daniel's arrived in Malaysia at 249,000. Pretty good price, no?
Yes, and this new model is not launched yet, but they released the price a few months ago saying that, you know, it's coming to town. Would you be interested in booking the car? They had no car in the showroom, no car for touch and feel, no car for test and drive. But last week, I was told by someone in the management that 50 firm bookings were received and they've only got allocation of 5 cars for this year.
Now, what?
Yes. Now, why only 5 cars? Because coming out of Japan, the cars are being taken up in every market around the region more than they can supply.
Oh.
So if you order your car today, you'll probably get it a year, year and a half from now. But the first 50, 5 will get it this year. The rest will get it early next year. So this is going to be something very interesting. Can you imagine 50 people have bought a car for 249,000 without even test driving it?
But I guess, you know, it goes on the reputation of, you know, the
GT86. That's it, right?
Yeah.
So I want to digress a little bit. So think about it, gentlemen. In the future, if people are buying cars without test driving it, do you need showrooms?
Do you need test drivers? In fact, Daniel, what are you doing today?
That's what I'm saying. You know, remember last week I said, I'm going to be out of a job soon. Nobody's going to bother with reviews or, you know, us motoring journalists. When a manufacturer has a car ready, they just show a couple of pictures and then people will just buy them and then you just ship it to their house.
That's it. Yeah.
I don't like that future.
Yes. So that comes to the next car, right, Arif?
And the future is now, because we are starting to see what the next generation of BMWs will look like. And I suppose, let's get right into it. We've seen the pictures. There'll be pictures on the Instagram, BFM Cruise Control. Let's get some thoughts from you guys, because I think I'm going to defend this car.
Go. You're talking about the all-new 7 Series, right?
Yes.
The one with the huge grille and the very tiny swept-back lights.
Mm-hmm.
Go on.
I saw this car and I absolutely loved it.
Ooh. Interesting.
Okay. And I'll tell you why. Because I wasn't wearing my glasses.
You got me there.
And then when I said, you know, I better have a closer look, because, you know, you see it on the phone, right?
Mm.
So after that, I put on my glasses and then I quickly rushed, got dressed, ran to the optician, had my eyes checked, came back home and I said to myself, I'm so lucky I'm at this age, because I'm not going to buy this car, but I know people in Arif's age group will love this car.
I think you've probably hit the nail on the head there, Daniel. It's not that I dislike it as much as Daniel. I don't need to rush out and get myself my eyes checked or whatever. I think what really kind of struck me as unusual and put me off a little bit is just the shape of the swept-back lights. There's something about them that I almost feel like it's unfinished, you know? It's like they've just added these little lights on just because they have to. I don't know. There's just something weird looking about the front of this. And I think when I looked at the back the first time, I'm reminded of like almost like an Alfa Romeo kind of rear a little bit, and just the way that it looks. I don't know. It's not fully grabbed my attention. I think I need to digest it a little bit more. But first glance, no, not for me.
It honestly took a while for me to digest this thing. I think the reactions I had were almost exactly the same as you guys. Even from the spy shot days of this car when it was rolling around, I was like, what, really? Come on. Split headlights, what is that? You know, where the round headlights of BMWs that we used to know and love. But I couldn't stop staring at it, you know? The more I looked at it, the more I compared it and put it side by side with the Audi A8 or the Mercedes EQS or the new S-Class. I just kept thinking, this stands out. This doesn't look like all of those. You know, I did a lot of research on, you know, what BMW was trying to envision when they were coming up with this design language. And a lot of designers actually pointed out that this, you know, in terms of the BMW design and the ethos, it is more similar to the 70s, 80s, 90s BMW designs than the previous generation of the 7 Series. It's going to be a bit difficult to try and convince you guys, but you know, you can have a look at all of that, but take a look at the Hofmeister Kink. You know, it's stronger than it ever was. The strong angles on the body shape, this, the classic three-box design compared to the swoopy stuff that the Mercedes S-Class has and the EQS has. It's even got the body lines that go right through the car. It's strong, muscular. The only problem with it, and I think, you know, what they tried to do with the lights, and they had to do it with the lights because the structure of the car is very tall. It's not as low slung and sleek. So they kind of had to fill that extra 50 centimeters of room with something. But I think it looks really good. I think, you know, if you guys saw it on the roads, I think you guys will like it just because of the shape.
Okay, then let's wait for it to come out on the road and have a good look then. Interior looks awesome. Don't get me wrong. There's just something about it that I'm like, yeah. But then again, it's a 7 Series and not everybody buys a 7 Series, do they?
But you see, I can understand BMW doing this because they are not targeting us, Richard. BMW is targeting the new, young,
exactly,
rich money.
Yeah.
And, you know, they love things like this. They love those slim lights. You know, they love those big grills. If you go on Facebook with all the BMW club pages, all the guys are going, yuck, oh, don't like, blah, blah, blah. But all these guys are driving old BMWs. They're driving the E39, E34, the E30, some even the E21. Very few are driving even BMWs from the last 10 years.
Right.
Because the people who can afford these new BMWs are not sitting in any clubs and making all kinds of comments. They have too much time to make money to buy these cars rather than spend it on Facebook. You get what I mean?
The interior is something that you mentioned, Rich, and I think it represents, I guess, the next big step up for all cars in general because, you know, at the front, you know, we have this new BMW screen that we've seen before in the BMW iX and everything. It's beautiful. Mm-hmm. It's amazing. You've got wood paneling and you've got even, you know, LED strips with that can sort of like change its color and have different patterns and sort of move about. But in the backseat, there is this massive 31-inch 8K widescreen that BMW calls the BMW Theater Screen. And that's basically, you know, where the car industry is headed. You're going to be sitting there.
Stuck in traffic.
You're stuck in traffic.
Unable to avoid your Zoom meeting.
Exactly. We're going to be at work all the time, aren't we?
Yeah.
So let's get your thoughts on that. You know, it's a massive widescreen. It has Amazon Fire TV plugged into it that we don't have in Malaysia. We have 5G connectivity, even a camera where you can hold your Zoom meetings in.
It terrifies me that, you know, there are places that I do not want to be in a meeting. Back of the car, in my garden, and on the toilet. You know, I don't want to be called into it. I mean, that's for me, obviously. But I don't, like Daniel said, I don't own a 7 Series. The people that do own 7 Series, for the most part, are wealthy businessmen, and they probably will think this is something great for them because it means they don't have to do it on their phone. They don't have to do it on their pad. It's in their car now. They can do everything that they need to do, hold high-powered business meetings in their car. For them, it's great. For me, not so much.
But you know, Richard, you've just started a whole problem for everybody.
What's that?
Because you said you don't want to be disturbed when you're on the toilet.
Ah, yes.
The next BMW is going to have a toilet in it.
I wouldn't be surprised, to be honest. Just to finish up, just go through a bit of the technicals because it's quite important for BMW. What makes this new 7 Series much different from the S-Class, for example, is the fact that this new 7 Series comes in a singular platform and it has multiple powertrains using the same platform, which is compared to the Mercedes. You get the S-Class, which is an S-Class, and you get the hybrid version. But if you want an all-electric S-Class, you got to get the EQS. So that's very interesting. The petrol models, you still get the 740i, 750i, V8s, inline six. All of them are mild hybrids. And then you got the hybrid 750e, which will apparently come in through the end of the year, inline six hybrid. And then finally, the all-electric i7, which is pure electric BMW motoring, rear-biased dual motor, making the same 536 horsepower output as the 760 and getting the sprint in under 4.5 seconds. So very quick car, very technological, and I'm going to say very, very good looking.
Beauty's in the eye of the beholder, Arif.
It is.
We'll just leave it at that, shall we?
Yes, please.
And the next one might have a toilet in it. Yeah. Food for thought. On that note, let's take a short break. Folks, of course, you are tuned in to Cruise Control, that car show here on BFM 89.9. When we come back, a bit of a road trip report, 1,200 kilometers in the Volvo V60. We'll be right back. BFM 89.9.
Beyond Frivolous Matters, BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
BFM 89.9, The Business Station. My name is Rich Bradbury. I'm joined, as usual, by Arif Ruse and Daniel Fernandez from DSF.my. This is Cruise Control. If you're only just joining us now, we've been speaking about rescuing a car, insurance fraud, motor oil prices going up, the Subaru BRZ, the new BMW 7 Series, and now it's all about the road trip. Arif, take us on a journey.
Oh, kick back, relax, have a cup of tea.
Okay.
We're talking about the V60 again. I know. Daniel reviewed it a couple of weeks ago. And if you remember, the first conversation we had when the V60 first came out, my goal was to try and convince people to get into wagons and not SUVs or MPVs.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to give that a go. So 1,200 kilometers in the V60, this was a trip that I had long dreamed of doing. It's a trip that my parents used to make annually in the pre-pandemic era. They fly out in the morning and return the following morning with boxes of keropok, like literally from a favorite keropok seller in Kota Baru. And they would do that because the quality of the keropok in Kelantan is simply incomparable to anywhere else. If you want to find good keropok, you got to go there. There's something about the thickness, the flavor, the way they do things. There's nothing like it. You know, and since we've been eating keropok of passable quality, I volunteered to get some quality keropok. And since, you know, there was a lovely wagon called the Volvo V60 that was launched recently, this was an ideal opportunity to do a proper shakedown of the car to find out what the car really was all about. And Daniel gave us a little bit of an insight of this car. You can listen to that podcast a couple of weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
I think, Daniel, you said you were blown away by the power. The ride was amazing. The handling of the car was amazing. And finally, you described the car as quite, you know, a long, hot hatch rather than a wagon.
Correct. A large, long, hot hatchback.
This trip, though, it was 2 days. And as mentioned, 1,200 kilometers through the heart of the Banjaran Titi Wangsa via Gua Musang up to Kota Baru. Then it's down to Kemaman for an overnight stay in Cherating. Kind of a little holiday. But we spent 14 hours on the road in the first day. And there's quite a lot of things to, I guess, you know, see and do on this journey slash road trip. And perhaps due to the pandemic, I was kind of happily reminded that how beautiful this country can be. The roads weep up and down through the mountains. We've got federal roads that cut through the valley and you get, honestly, some spectacular views, especially on a clear day. And through this journey, we even had a lot of giggles because we drove through a town called Dong.
So why is that funny?
Yeah, why? What's funny about that?
I'm sorry, you guys are like 50 years old now.
Children, my word. You find such things funny. Okay, continue.
And then, you know, Gua Musang, truly an amazing place because you get to see all of these big, huge mountains right in front of you. And these are basically cliffs. Right in front of you. And we wanted to see something called the Gua Musang Ethnobotany Park. A little bit of a travel show here. It was a kind of a research facility with some, you know, greenery and free tour that was included. Google showed that it had great reviews, lots of people enjoying and recommending for us to go as well. And it said it was open. But when we turned out, it just turned out to be a mound of red sand.
Oh, no.
Yeah. What do you expect, I guess? Then there was the journey through the Federal Route 34, which is quite an interesting road in itself. I wrote about this quite a while back. It's called the Central Spine Road, and it's a key elevated highway that weaves through the Banjaran Titi Wangsa. It's said to be built for the purpose to reconnect both sides of Taman Negara and to save our tigers and tapirs from, you know, becoming roadkill. And of course, this highway shortens the duration of the journey that people take during Raya from 8 to 9 hours to under 7 hours. So, you know, very, very interesting. And I remember when it was opened in 2018, it was quite a big thing. And JKR, you know, the Road Transport Department, they were very proud of their work. You know, they had all of these drones flying, giving us beautiful views of the valley and the highway cutting through it, not disturbing the nature around it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the tarmac looked smooth. But reality in Malaysia was vastly different because most of the sections of this highway is still incomplete. And driving through it was more like flying through turbulence.
Oh,
there's mounds of dirt everywhere, but on the plus side, at least you get a good view of, you know, what the mountains look like. And I think compared to the West Coast and the East Coast, this road is the one that's much less taken. And I think people should see this road. And then there's Route 8, Gua Musang to Kota Baru. It's known as one of the most dangerous roads in Peninsular Malaysia due to its weaving through the hills, you know, the road kills, the lots of trucks and the narrow and badly maintained roads. And I don't know about you guys, but I'm sure you've heard so many ghost stories about these roads. If you do a quick YouTube search about Lubuk Raya Gua Musang, you'll have folks with dash cams in pitch black darkness with little red circles showing, you know, Pontianaks and Pochongs. Have you guys heard one of these stories before?
Oh, yes. I've seen some of them.
Yeah?
What? You can tell me more later.
Yes, I will.
Just do a quick YouTube search. You'll find lots of, I guess, not unfunny videos. Then there's Federal Route 3, which is from Kota Baru down to Kemaman. This is the road that will be replaced by the East Coast Highway. Still hasn't been, even though the East Coast Highway has been open for about 12 million years. This road was really nice. I think if you love driving, especially you, Daniel, I'm sure you've driven this road.
Yes.
Fantastic, especially at sundown and at night. You know, the roads are wide, well-paved, and very, very scenic. But finally, the car. Let's get to the car. First, I'm going to start off with the comparisons to the S60. And I remember the S60 as, and maybe you can verify this a bit, Daniel. I remember the S60 as a very supremely comfortable car in every respect. It's practical, ride quality is fantastic, but you know, Volvo marketed this as a sports saloon, and I think it's a bit of a stretch.
Well, you have to understand something. In comparison to whatever they sell in Europe, it's a sports saloon. But when it comes here, because we have a lot of other options available that the Europeans don't get, so a lot of Malaysians tend to not look at Volvo as a sports car or a sports sedan, but more like a nice family executive vehicle, you know?
Yeah, which is, I guess, what it was to me, because it was a very restrained car, you know, it was something soft, something level-headed and something restrained about it. The way I described it is it's a Volvo. It's like the S60 is a golfer being told to do some boxing. They can throw a strong punch, but they are going to get punched a lot because they're not nimble. I don't know if you guys will get that, but it works for me.
Yeah, got it.
And I thought, you know, this restrained character back in 2019, one of the first test cars that I ever got, I thought that this car would be simply amazing if it was more traditionally Volvo-like, which is something with a long roof and bucket loads of boot space, which is what we have here. And with that, you know, bucket loads of boot space and wagonness and practicality, I don't think I've driven a car that has struck people more than the Volvo V60. I think people just looked at it and went, damn, that's a nice car, instead of what is that, you know? They know it's a Volvo, but they just couldn't take their eyes off it, I think. And I took the whole family out to test its practicality before going on this huge trip. It was 5 adults, a wheelchair, and a mobility scooter. It all just about packed into the car. And, you know, coming from a Hyundai Santa Fe, which is a big SUV, as our family car, we always understood, you know, it's going to be a bit of a tight package, but it fit all of us. And I think that's a really amazing thing, because this is not the V90, this is the V60, this is the smaller one. So it's still very practical, lots of usable space, and perhaps comparing it to the 250,000 ringgit Volkswagen Arteon, which is similarly sized, right, Daniel?
It is very similar, yes.
It's perhaps not as cavernous in length, but it's still very practical, and its low load height means that it's definitely much easier to chuck stuff inside the car rather than, you know, an XC60, which is a bit tall at the back. Mm-hmm. And I can understand why Daniel calls it a long hot hatch, because it's more space, way more space than a hatch, but it's not got the space of the old Volvo wagons or the old Mercedes TE cars, you know?
And it's got a low roof line.
Yeah. You know, I wasn't convinced when you said that, but now having ridden around in it, I can sort of agree with that. Point number three, the ergonomics, because this is what Volvo prides themselves upon: safety, sustainability, and ergonomics. And, you know, honestly, I didn't mind sitting in the driver's seat for almost 14 hours on the road, because the seats for a car that's not worth 600,000 ringgit, the seats in this car is just something else. You can adjust every aspect of it, from lumbar support to the side support to the front extension as well. It's just an amazing place. And the driving position is spot on. And your seating position, I think this is a good point of the car, because a lot of people buy SUVs and crossovers because they want the higher seating position, right? Mm. And they don't want to buy the 3 Series or the C-Class because it sits a bit low. This V60, to really sit comfortable in it, you have to sit a bit higher. And I think a lot of people will find appeal in that. And the next thing about the interior of this car is that there's a sense of airiness. Due to the design, there's a lot of times where I thought the car was a lot wider than it was. And obviously that's helped by the amount of windows in the boot as well as the panoramic sunroof. There is one downside, though, when driving this car. You know, it probably doesn't matter to a lot of the buyers because a lot of the buyers are older and, you know, they could probably afford something like this and not care about the tech. But really, the screens and the tech inside this car, I'm sure you felt it as well, Daniel. It's just a bit low res for a 2022 car.
Oh, that is interesting.
You know, I've got a really old TV sitting at home. It's like 720p, first generation HD. And I go to a friend's house and they've got this big, huge 55-inch widescreen, 4K, whatever. And I just think, my God, what a world. Look at the detail. And that's the same sort of thing that I feel in this car, you know, compared to the new BMWs and the Mercedes, just really isn't quite there. Still, though, in terms of technology, it has everything. It has the blind spot monitoring, lane detection, forward collision warning, all of those fun stuff. And Volvo, I think, I still maintain this from when I test drove all the other Volvos way back when. I think they have one of the best semi-autonomous driving tools in the market today. That's better than the newest Mercedes even. I think the way it handles itself by itself is probably the best in the market today. And it's interesting to note that Volvo won't allow you to use pilot assist when you're going beyond the speed limit.
Is that something that's specific to Volvo, do you think, Daniel?
I think it's specific to Volvo because Volvo, you know, they've always been on this safety issue. And recently, they also capped all the speed limits to 180 on all their cars, even the XC90, the XC60, and even this very fast, longer hatchback. But it's a good move, and I think it makes a lot of sense because do you really need to go more than 180?
Yep.
Agreed. Anyway, the law doesn't allow you to go more than 180, you know? Sorry, the law doesn't allow you to go more than 110. My mistake.
Yeah, that's true.
So you're not supposed to go 180.
And Volvo's basically saying, if the car is going to drive for you, it's best you stay within the speed limit. Anyway, going beyond the speed limit is not a hard thing in this car because the powertrain, as Daniel mentioned before, is very, very powerful. But I didn't find it particularly exciting. I found it very steely, very determined, more like a big V8 in the way, you know, it delivers its power. It's not hair-raising, I guess, or entertaining. It's very brute. And, you know, 407 horsepower, 640 newton meters of torque. It's a lot of power. But, you know, after driving the Arteon for a while, the Arteon and perhaps the 330i BMW, those engines are a bit more entertaining to drive. This car, it packs a lot of torque, but laissez-faire in its ways. And, you know, part and parcel due to its engineering, because when you press the throttle and kick it down, it's a bit laggy as the computers have to try to figure out whether it wants to use either the turbocharger, the supercharger, or the electric motor, or even all of those three together. So it has to do a bit of math before actually delivering that power to you. On this road trip, I thought what was interesting when I was trying to figure out how to drive this car, because it has its, you know, electric range, 41 kilometers, which is, you know, admittedly just about enough to do all the running around in the city, but it just isn't enough range to turn it into a long distance driver. Fuel consumption, I admit, you know, I was pushing this car along quite a bit. 8.1 liters per 100 kilometer for a car that weighs 2 tons and has this amount of power. I think that is spectacular.
I love the power of the Volvo and I love driving it. And that's why I said in terms of even price, take for example, the new Golf R, it makes a better performance vehicle over the Golf R, which costs much, much more and offering less space.
Yep. And the value doesn't stop there because I think for the price, 295,000, right? This car, somewhere around there. The ride quality of this car, there's something different about it compared to the S60. I think it's the extra long wheelbase or the extra weight, because to me, the ride quality in this car is just supreme. It's very, very assuring. I really, really love the way this car carries itself on the road. It's so composed. It's unperturbed by all of these road imperfections and wrong cameras on all of our highways. And I think that's partly due to the fact that the car weighs 2 tons and it glues it to the ground like an anchor. So, you know, going through the turbulence on the East Coast Highway or through the Central Spine Road, it really doesn't feel like it's going to take off. It really feels like it's going through the ground and it doesn't send any jolts through the car and it doesn't wallow around like a boat, which is a really, really, really good thing. Which leads me to the handling, because as I mentioned, you know, the S60 wasn't as sharp or excitable as the BMW. And I thought it's going to make a lot more sense if it was more practical. And with the V60, this is perfectly fine. Yes, the steering is a bit slower than the rest, is less precise, but for a family wagon, it's just amazing. I think it's so composed. Driving the C-Class, the new C-Class, it was great, yes. But there's something about the way that this Ryzen, the way that it handles, the way it carries its people, and you know, the, all the weight that it has to carry. It's just laid back, it's low strung, and no matter how fast you go or how fast this car is willing to let you go, it didn't alarm any of my passengers. And, you know, we were four adults in this car with all of our stuff in boxes and boxes and boxes of Kurobo. So, you know, I was really impressed. And, you know, three of my friends, they are, you know, one of them drives a new 3 Series. The other one drives a Land Cruiser, a V8. The other one basically drives many cars because he takes a Grab all day. He's basically Richard. But they were really, really huge fans of this car by the end of it. And this car really changed their mindset of what Volvo is. It's not boring. It's not totally family-like. It's exciting, but in a different way. So to conclude, I really, really love this car. I don't think there's any car in this market in Malaysia that occupies this space this well. We could talk about how wagons are, you know, perfect in every way, but this car really, I feel like it drives home the point. Supremely comfortable, very easy to drive, tickles you in the right places. And I think an observation, I think it's absolutely perfectly sized for our Malaysian roads. And I think that was the problem with the V90 because it just felt vast. That car felt like a truck. The V60 feels a bit smaller. Mm. And on the smaller trunk and federal roads, we, you know, often we'd get stuck behind an Alphard or a Honda Accord or an S-Class. And you could see how they drive. They just look like they were fearful of ending up into the ditch or fearful of, you know, making the ride a little bit too wallowy and rolly in the corners. Mm-hmm. This car, it just feels at home in the back road, on the highway, in the city because of the plug-in hybrid thing. In conclusion, towards the end of the journey, I came away thinking that, you know, too often people look at SUVs, MPVs, thinking that, yes, they'll need the extra trunk space and for the extra seats because, you know, Raya's coming up. They want to take the whole family, all 9 of them, inside the Alphard and just take off and, you know, never look back. This car reminded me that you can still, you know, go on these 14-hour, 12-hour, 9-hour journeys and still kind of enjoy the journey. You know, let the sun come through the panoramic sunroof. Enjoy the smooth ride of the Volvo. And when you get to your destination 12 hours later, you don't feel exhausted or a bit fearful or a bit sick. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's nice, I guess, not to feel isolated from the world because you can look outside without staring at your iPad with 7 of your other family members like you would in a black tinted Velfire. So that's it.
Nice review. Nice. Brilliant. Arif, thank you very much for that.
Thank you.
I feel like I've been on a 1,200-kilometer trip. Daniel, how about you?
Oh, are we done?
Yes.
Because I fell asleep, sorry. No, it was a good review, good review. Very thorough, very emotional, very... how much did Volvo pay you, Arif?
Zero.
But how long did it take? How long was the journey, Arif, total, to get there?
I think it was 900 kilometers up. I left my house at 6 a.m. I got to the hotel at 9 p.m.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah. And I didn't feel tired.
And I'm guessing it was a leisurely drive up there as well.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I had to please the passengers. We had a really important Grab Platinum passenger in the back as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, all this fine, Arif, but, you know, Richard, I want to ask you whether you're on board with me on this. Where is our box of Kurobo?
I was going to say that when he said it was full of boxes and boxes of Kurobo. I'm like, so where's mine then?
Exactly.
Unfortunately.
And now comes the sad story, then.
When we got there.
Here we go.
Yeah, unfortunately, when we got there, the Kurobo place that my mom used to go to is Kurobo Chap Kapal.
Uh-huh.
We arrived at about 3:30, you know, 3:30 in the afternoon, pretty decent time. You know, we wouldn't expect things to be sold out, but it was already sold out.
But you said you had boxes of Kurobo in the car.
So we had to go around the corner to a place where my mom used to go and buy, and we bought a little bit of stuff. You know, I'll give you guys, you know, a packet or two.
There's always a but,
yes,
isn't there?
And a packet or two. One each, that's two.
I'm sorry, I'll do better next time, you know.
Right, I suppose on that note we should probably wrap up, shouldn't we?
Yep.
Okay, folks, it's come to the end of today's show. This has been Cruise Control, of course. Just a little bit of news as well. We're going to be going on a hiatus, and when I say that, we could be back, we might not be back, we don't know what's happening. We need a break. We're having a break, aren't we, lads?
Yes, we are.
Yep.
That's where we are right now. So if you don't hear from us next week, don't panic. We're still around. Listen back to the podcast in case you missed any of those. You can get them from wherever you normally get them from. We recommend you use the BFM app. It's available on the Apple App Store or Google Play. Follow us on all of your socials, of course. You can find us by looking up our names. Daniel's got a website. Arif's got his Instagram. I've got my... Just follow us. Do all of that stuff. Right? You know what to do.
You can always hear, Rich's beautiful voice every afternoon anyway.
Yeah. And if you listen carefully, you just need to take off your headphones and step outside. You can probably hear Daniel anyway, wherever you are in the city.
Loud enough, Daniel? Yes, loud enough.
Right, we're signing off. This has been Cruise Control, the car show here on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.